the Water Committee this 11th of March. It looks like we will have a short committee this morning. Should be pretty easy to dispose of a couple of these bills from the PUC and get on to... we're going to, at this point, open a public hearing on both House Bill 2226 and 2227.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
I get to read my little thing, I think.
All right.
Gave me time to put on my glasses. House Bill 2226 eliminates exemption from utility regulation for water utilities that serve fewer than 300 customers, provides the water utility that serves fewer than 500 customers, and that at any time charges average annual residential rate of $18 per month or more is thereafter subject to regulation by a public utility commission except for financial regulation, provides an association with that provides water to members of the association and that is not public, a public utility may be regulated as a public utility upon petition of 20% of the members of the association, exempts cooperatives and public bodies. House Bill 2227 allows water utility that serves fewer than 500 customers to elect to be subject to financial regulation by public utility commission, provides that the commission may allow rates for water utility that include cost of specific capital improvements, allows commission to impose civil penalty of not more than $500 against a person who violates statute, rule, or order of commission related to water utilities, allows water utility to apply for commission order designating exclusive service territory, specifies procedures for applications and commission decisions on applications.
At this point, we would ask the Public Utility Commission to...
Mr. Chair, I would also ask Lee not to repeat anything we discussed yesterday in his testimony, so that should limit it to about 15 seconds, I would think.
Okay.
Well, good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. That will conclude my testimony. No, good morning. For the record, I'm Lee Beyer, Commissioner with the Oregon Public Utility Commission. I have with me Rebecca Hawthorne, who manages the water programs, in case you ask some really tough questions. The two bills that we have in front of you this morning come about as a result of an interim task force that we put together to review water regulation in Oregon. There was a lot of discussion of it during the last legislative session, and so we thought it would be good to take a look at that and ask some tough questions of ourselves. And that task force, we had eight members and a couple of ex-officio members, as I recall, that were composed of customers and owners of private water companies that went through our system and made some recommendations. The two bills that we're bringing to you today reflect those recommendations. We regulate a handful of small water companies, handful, actually about 80. There are about 2,000 water utilities in the state. Most of those are public utilities, either municipalities, cooperatives, public utility districts, or I guess that covers the public side. And we're just dealing with the very small water companies that are private and the monopolies. And in those contexts, the Public Utility Commission represents the ratepayers, make sure that they're getting a reasonable deal and that the quality of the service they get are acceptable and up to standards.
Excuse me, Mr. Mayor. Doesn't the Public Utility Commission represent the ratepayers and some of the others too?
Not in water. In water utilities, we only represent the ratepayers of private water companies. The other ones, the basic concept is that when you have a public utility, that terminology I find very confusing because we call them public utilities, but really what it talks about is if you have a elected governing board where the members have a role in electing who's going to run the utility, the basic concept is if they have that right, then they have control over the utility and they don't need somebody acting on their behalf. We're only talking about those that the law confusingly qualifies as a public utility, which are private companies that are subject to oversight. So, And that's within water. We also, as you know, deal with electrical, natural gas, and telephone services. So this is the smallest piece of our responsibility, and at times some of the most difficult to deal with, because it's essentially all small, very small owners. The largest water utility that we regulate has about 2,500 customers. It's Avion Water in Central Oregon. The smallest has about, I think, 15, Rebecca?
11.
So fewer than I thought. So they're pretty small. Essentially, I think the way, other than the big ones, really even the big ones, the way to think of them is generally what's happened is somebody got the right to develop an area outside of a municipality. And as part of the infrastructure that they put in so that they could sell lots and build houses and sell houses, they put in a water system. And after the development was all done, they were left running that water system. Sometimes they ended up hanging onto it and running it themselves. Often they ended up selling it to somebody else, and they're running it as a private business. And that's sort of how they come about. So they're predominantly very small, but there's a couple of them that are over 1,000, and as I say, one that's about 2,500. So anyway, back to this. What this does is that it clarifies some of the laws, starting with 2,600. 2,600 really does two things. One, very simply, it simplifies the regulation of who is regulated, and it eliminates one of the thresholds and just essentially says that we have two classes of regulation. One is on the quality, just service level. We regulate those for the smaller ones. Or if they charge over $18 a month, then they come under rate regulation. So it clarifies that piece there. Still, I think, very confusing in language. The second piece, and probably more clear as we went through it, is the matter of associations. And I think the way to think of those is like a homeowner association. That's probably something that we're more used to thinking of. If the association, as part of their duties, is selling water outside of their membership, then they automatically come under regulation because they're selling to somebody else. If they're just selling to their own members, then it's not clear currently in statute whether they come under our jurisdiction or not. What this does is sets in place sort of a bright line, makes it easier for us. It says if 20% of the association's members say that, or petition us and say, we would like you to regulate our association, then it gives the PUC the right to come in and determine whether there's a need to do that or not. And that's simply all that does, is it provides us that opportunity to do that. We had I've described to many of you in meetings, a situation we had in Central Oregon recently where we had a small number of members of an association that were very unhappy with the way the association was running, and they petitioned us to get involved and felt very strongly about that. We went in and looked and said there really isn't a basis in law for us to intervene and regulate. They weren't happy with that decision, and because it's not clear. So this provides us a little more clarity. That's basically all House Bill 2226 does. If, Mr. Chair, if I could to turn to 2227, that would that be appropriate?
Fine.
2227 is a little more of a technical bill. One of the things it does is it clarifies that small companies can ask for regulation, rate regulation, service regulation. And that sounds kind of odd, I think, when you think about it, that someone would ask, but it actually can be a big help to them. If they ask, often the small companies, just because of the nature of their size and the lack of business experience, don't know how to do it, go about setting rates and what they should set. If they ask us to do it, we then can assist them in developing their rate structure and figuring out what they need to do that. So it's a voluntary request that puts us in, provides assistance to them and protection for their customers as well. The second thing it does is it allows the inclusion of the cost of new capital investments in what's called construction work in progress. And the best analogy I can think of that is many of you are probably familiar with systems development charges in cities where you start being able to include the cost of that in preparation for putting it in. Thing. Under traditional regulation, utility regulation, you can include facilities until after they're built and installed and in service. And this changes that process. And that the intent is to help these small companies be able to capitalize what they're they're doing and make the adjustments. That's a problem we encounter frequently is they're undercapitalized and they can't make the adjustments necessary to do the service improvements as needed. That's going to get to be more of a problem with what I'm sure you've heard a lot about as the Clean Water Act sort of ratchets up in its implementation. Many of these small companies are going to have problems complying. This is intended to help them a little bit. The third section, a little more traditional, allows, we're requesting the authority to levy fines of up to $500 against the company. We have an amendment to this to clarify our intent, or the intent of the task force was to levy the fine but make the fine be applicable back to the benefit of the participants, not to us. One go into the general fund, one come to the PUC, and go back into improving the company. Frankly, it's just a hammer. Sometimes it allows us, the process for us, if we wanted to levy a fine outside of this, is we have to go into circuit court, and it's a fairly circuitous process and expensive, and we don't do it. This is just a little easier way to get into it, the intent being to help people come into compliance quicker. Section 4 restores something that was inadvertently eliminated in 1999, and that's the right of the companies to come to us and seek the establishment of exclusive service territories. That's a fairly routine thing in utility law where people say they're a monopoly and they have a right to serve a geographic area. This puts that back in law. And as I said, then that's basically the content of the law. We have two amendments. One I mentioned was to clarify that if we do issue a fine, it goes back to the benefit of the customers in that utility. The second thing is emergency repairs, and we're asking for the authority to go in where there's an emergency and make a water system improvement of up to $5,000 and apply that back against charge that back to the company so that they would cover that cost. Mr. Chair, that's basically the intent of both bills. They're fairly nuts and bolts to my knowledge. There's no opposition to them. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Is there any questions for
Mr. Chair?
Bar.
Thank you. Good timing on my part. Good to see you again, Lee.
Representative.
On that last piece, in terms of the issue of recovery, what's the real issue there? Why? Yesterday we talked a little bit about that in my office. By putting this in statute, allowing you the opportunity to recover those funds, what's the good side of that, and what's the bad side of that?
Okay, Mr. Chair, Representative Krupp, we talked yesterday, and I think I talked with most of you, about a couple of examples of that. Let me use one. We had a small water company in the Lane County area that has been a little problematic. The owner lives in Bend. I'm not sure if it's Bend, but in Central Oregon, and they have a very small water company there that serves about 25 families. Occasionally, not often, but occasionally they'd have a problem and the owner was relatively unavailable to fix something. Water system breaks down, there's no water going to those 25 families, they can't get a hold of the owner. What do they do? What they did in the past, or in the last most recent incident, was they went out and contacted a plumber and had him come in and fix it and get the water flowing again. The question is the owner could say, I didn't authorize that. And that's tough. You know, whoever got the plumber there is stuck with the bill and has no redress against that. What this would do was it would allow them to call us, and our job is to make sure that the customer's service keeps flowing. We could go in, and if we determined it was an emergency, that there was health and safety issues there, we could call the plumber and say, go in and fix it, pay the bill, and recover it from the owner. So that's the function, and there are lots of little examples like that. I think the positives to that, to answer your question, Representative, in response to that, is I think that's our role. Our role is to make sure that for the customers we represent, that the services keep going. And it puts us, rather than an individual customer, in the role of having to battle that out. If the utility thinks we did something that didn't need to be done, they can challenge that. They can formally challenge it, come in front of the commission, make a case. If that isn't right, they have access to the courts. And so there's a fairness, there's a protection there. I suppose the downside to that would be if we were overly heavy-handed with it. But again, I think there's some protections there. If we're overly heavy-handed, it'd be fairly easy for a judge to say that. And frankly, I think the commission, you're really talking about the staff who's running the program on a day-to-day basis. The commission has a pretty good record of being fair to the utilities and balancing that need and working it out. And if anything, my perspective, having looked at it from a year and a half, is that the commission probably bends too far to work with utilities. But these are issues. I mean, I guess I would have a different answer. Would be less concerned if we were talking about telecommunications. But when you start talking about water, which is pretty basic, I mean, there's some issues. People need that, and they don't have any control over it. That's really the issue that's here.
Well, and I would just make comment that you answered actually my next question in saying that there will be redress through the courts, or actually to come to the commission. If a utility owner that you couldn't get a hold of needed to challenge, in other words, didn't feel that they didn't have an opportunity to have input on what type of repair, how much it costs, that type of thing, that they would have the opportunity to talk with you about that and have a formal process by where they could challenge that. Now, the reason I say that is because as chairman of the Agriculture Committee, I have a bill in front of me right now regarding forestry and the ability of private landowners to challenge the firefighting costs and decision-making on a fire that was made by the State Department of Forestry that came onto their land. And it's one of those due process issues, and it clearly has raised some questions on that particular issue. If there's a due process circumstance already in place, I'm clearly fine with that. Just as long as you have the opportunity to come back and say, well, you shouldn't have replaced that 6-inch water main with 50 feet of 8-inch or something. That opportunity to come back and talk would be important.
Mr. Chair, Representative Krupp, I appreciate that, and from my limited experience, I've learned everything. I don't think in my 20 some years of public experience I found any area of government that had more judicial process than Public Utility Commission.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Other questions? I certainly am hopeful that none of these folks ever really have to revert to going to the courts. As you have indicated, these are small, sometimes very small, and while we would have much confidence in the current PUC, we realize that people come and people go in these jobs, and it is only this that gives me some reservation. If you get a little private company providing services to 25 people, if that private company has to wind up going to court, you understand that.
I understand
the issue there. And if I can, on House Bill 2226, on line 15, I don't know whether you have the bills in front of you or not.
I do have.
Where it says that the Utility Commission to have provided inadequate, referring to the water utility providing inadequate or discriminatory service at any time. Are there any definitions of this, or is this just a interpretation of the PUC?
Mr. Chair, there are definitions that are outlined in administrative rule that we deal with the adequacy, but if you want more specifics, I can let Rebecca get into that.
Okay. Before we have a work session on this, could I ask you to give me those definitions,
sure,
if that's within the realm of possibility?
I'm happy to do that.
The other question I have in mind, I think in accordance with our conversation, have some amendments on 2227?
Yes, we have provided those, Mr. Chair, to the committee administrator, and would, I think we have, haven't we, Pete?
I'm not sure if I've got them yet, but I'll get them.
Did you want to speak briefly to those amendments?
Well, actually, I did, and looks like this. There are two small ones. They've been prepared. The language has been prepared by our Attorney General. And essentially, as I said, there are two of them. They'll be to House Bill 2227. The first one amends Section 3, Sub 1, where it adds a line to clarify that any fines would be provided for the effect of the customers. The second one is adding a section in ORS Chapter 757 that speaks to the emergency repairs. And if the committee so chooses, Mr. Chair, we would appreciate it if you would have those submitted to Legislative Council.
I think it'd be faster if we added them than if we went through some other process. So
fine. We will whatever works.
Bring that back. Yeah. Other questions for?
Oh, there they are, right there. Okay.
Yeah. Other questions for Lee?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. We will close the public hearing on 2226 and open a public hearing on 2491.
House Bill 2491 directs members of Board of Commissioners of Port to file annual statement of economic interest with the Oregon Governmental Standards and Practices Commission.
We would ask, and I see Representative Johnson here, who is the, I believe, sponsor of the bill. We'd ask Representative Johnson if you'd be kind enough to enlighten us on this issue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Betsy Johnson. I'm the state representative for House District 31. I hope I brought you a bill that is not controversial, has no known opposition, no fiscal impact. Just the right kind of bill for this session. By way of background, what has motivated me to offer this bill for your consideration is 8 years, two terms, as a publicly elected port commissioner for the Port of St. Helens. So I understand the important work of ports. Ports are partially entrepreneurial, partially units of government, and I think as we begin talking about economic revitalization in this state, that ports will play a role in helping to bring that about. I also understand that in small communities where there are a limited pool of candidates able to stand for election, that lots of folks know each other and do business with each other. The purpose of this bill is to actually help facilitate the work of ports in order for them to stay nimble and responsive. They need to do some of their work behind closed doors, and I think that it would be reassuring to the public to have a disclosure of the economic interests among and between port commissioners as they do their work, helping to bring businesses, recruit businesses, put in the infrastructure necessary to have businesses flourish in a particular area. So this is no more, I think, than just a good government bill. It certainly would be a prophylactic against more onerous limitations on ports' ability to do business. And so I hope that you will consider this favorably. Again, it has no fiscal. We all fill out these forms. You know that they're not onerous to do. And I have discussed this with the representative of the ports group, Ken Armstrong. They have no opposition to this. I think it would be minimal stress on individual commissioners, and I hope you'll consider it favorably.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Crawford. Thank you. Representative, could you define the use of your word prophylactic in this case?
An opportunity to protect and inhibit bad things from happening.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, good bill.
There are not too many forums that one can try to work that word in.
And I might say, Mr. Chair, and to the good representative, you did a masterful job of it.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Representative Crump.
Before I bang the gavel, we're going to stop this discussion. Please. Are there any other questions for Representative Johnson? Seeing no other questions, I see no reason that we will not move this forward at our earliest opportunity. We'll put it on a work session, and I don't think there's perhaps any reason for you to attend that particular session. Yeah. But in the event that there are some obstacles appear, curveballs appear, rest assured that before we vote it down, we would certainly be in contact with you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for your courtesy. The staff administrator has been very courteous as well, and I'd return at any point the committee had questions or any other issues.
Very good.
Thank you, Ben.
Seeing no other business to come before the Water Committee today, we are, I don't know whether we're going to apologize or take credit for giving you a light day on this Tuesday and an opportunity then to do some other kind of fun things. Before I bang the gavel, I would like to see the two Democratic members of the committee that are still here after we've adjourned.
Stepped in at this time.
All right, you guys are toast.